If you're that kind of, you know, listener, you would need something to doodle on while you're listening. I won't judge you. I will judge you. That's not true. It'll change my opinion of you a little bit, but that's okay. Don't take it too personal. But I am glad you're here. I hope that this morning is encouraging and it's challenging for you. So thank you for taking time on your Memorial Day weekend to come here and celebrate with us. And hopefully, together, but also individually, we leave through those doors different than when we came in. And I just want to take a moment before we get into Ecclesiastes. And when we do, we're going to be in Ecclesiastes chapter 7. So you can turn there. I know you're doing the math. I'll explain in a moment. But so you can turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 7, which we're going to get to in a moment. But before we do, I just want to take this chance, and it shouldn't be caused by significant events that we do this, but even just the events of the last week in our country, I want to pray for our country, and I want to pray for us. And so would you pause with me for just a moment and pray together? God, thank you that you have graciously allowed us to live in a country like we live in. And thank you for those that were willing to give so much to create and establish a country where we are freely able to do what we do this morning. And so we probably take it for granted sometimes, but I want to say thank you and that I'm grateful for it. And we love you because of it. But I also want to express, God, on behalf of my country that we're not perfect. And I'm sorry. We have mercy on us and continue to be gracious with us. Would you create an urgency and a desire in the hearts of each man and woman in this country to love each other, not act out of that hatred? Would you be with all of those this weekend that are grieving, whether it's because of recent events and recent issues and situations, or it's because it's just a reminder of what was once? Give us peace and give us that comfort that only you can give. But God, help us to go beyond pointing of fingers at situations and issues and calling it out. Help us to be a part of that solution. And most significantly, God, help us solve the deepest problem that our neighbors and our community has and introduce them to you and the gospel. Help us to be brave enough to do that as we look at those situations, God. Give us courage. Give us motivation. Make us restless until we know for sure that if anything were to happen to our neighbor, our friends, our coworkers, we can praise you because we know where they are. Help us to do better. I pray this in your name. Like I said, we're going to be continuing our series in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, so hopefully you're there with me. This is the last of Ecclesiastes prior to the summer. Next week, we're going to begin our series called Things Jesus Said, and that'll be all summer. It'll be about 12 weeks, 13-ish weeks, and so I hope you look forward to that. We're going to look at just maybe things that are unexpected that Jesus said, things that are confusing that Jesus said, whatever it is. It might sound odd, it might sound strange, it might be hard to hear, it might hurt our feelings a little bit, but because Jesus said it, we can't avoid it and we can't ignore it. And so we're going to look at some of those for this summer as a kind of a change of pace. But this Sunday, we're going to continue with our series in Ecclesiastes. So Ecclesiastes chapter 7 is where we're going to be this morning. So I will say this about Ecclesiastes chapter 6 and explain why we've skipped it. Because if you were paying attention last week, we finished chapter 5, right? And then we should be going on to Ecclesiastes chapter 6. So I'll give you the summary of Ecclesiastes chapter 6. So it is about satisfaction, and that satisfaction in life isn't guaranteed because the ability to be satisfied comes from God. We talked about that last week. We talked about the fact that if we feel unsatisfied with where God has us at, we need to ask him to satisfy us, not give us what we want, but make us content with what we have, where we are in life. And so he kind of repeats that a little bit more directly, a little bit more, with a hyperbole. He really drills down into that truth that you're not guaranteed satisfaction, and life can be incredibly unsatisfying if you don't find it through God. If God doesn't give you that satisfaction, it can be dissatisfying, it can be disappointing, it can be hopeless, it can be even unsure what comes next. Now, that's kind of a retread of things that we've already said up to this point. If you read, I'm not saying don't read chapter 6. Please read chapter 6. I'm not skipping it because it's not inspired or it's not applicable or any of that reasons. It's a retread, a repeat of things that we've already read and discussed. But the other reason is because this is the fifth Sunday of the month, and we have welcomed everybody into this room, and we are pumped that our kids are in here this morning to be able to celebrate with us, worship with us, be challenged with us. But there is a metaphor I would like to not address in chapter 6, just because I don't want to cause that discussion for you. I don't want to initiate those thoughts earlier than they need to be. And so parents, you can read it and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about when you read that. And so because it's a retread, because it's a repeat of what we've already said, and because that metaphor or illustration that he uses, I prefer not to unpack in this broad of an audience. We're going to move on to chapter 7. So hopefully you'll forgive me for that. But again, read chapter 6, be challenged by chapter 6, and consider, am I unsatisfied to this extent? Do I find life to be this unsatisfying? And if true, God is the one who gives satisfaction. God is the one who can give us the ability to be content with life and find purpose and meaning in it. So chapter 7 is where we're going to be this morning. Last week, I pointed out to you that everything costs more. Everything costs more. And that is incredibly frustrating. Fortunately, gas hasn't gone up since I said that last week. It's the same price that it was last time I said it, but it's still high. Still incredibly high. But because everything costs more, this causes us small and large, or larger, dilemmas than other things. And so I faced a little of those dilemmas in the last little while. Small dilemma, we've said, do I fill up on gas now, or do I wait and hope the price of gas goes down? But the risk is it might go up, right? So small dilemma. Because the cost of everything is high, you're looking at those prices and you're thinking, whew, do I do it for $4.69, or do I hope that maybe it drops to $4.54, or risk it going up to like $4.73, right? And you've played that game. You're like, and if you're like me, you're like, I'm going to fill up half a tank just in case, right? And so we'll only do half the tank, and then we'll see. Maybe I was right, maybe I was wrong, and then, so that little dilemma. Slightly larger dilemma you may have faced or I have faced in the last little while. Do we take the trip we were planning and eat the cost of gas and supplies because it's going to cost us, three times more than it should? So, larger dilemma, do we take that trip, right? Or do we go do that thing because it costs a little bit more than it would have the last time we do it? So, slightly bigger dilemma than do I purchase the gas is do I make myself purchase more gas than I normally would purchase, right? Do I take that trip? Larger dilemma, I have to buy a car, right? And that's an even bigger dilemma. What do I do about it? Do we make this last as long as we possibly can, or how do I do it? But the truth is, in the last while for all of us, there have been more than just financial dilemmas and tricky situations in the past few years. How do I deal with COVID in my own life? How do I deal with how other people are dealing with COVID in their own lives? Right? How do I deal with it? How do they deal with it? How do I deal with how they're dealing with it? And how do they deal with how I'm dealing with it? You follow that? Right? That's dilemmas. How should I vote in our elections, in our primaries, in our elections? How should I handle how other people voted in the elections and in the primaries? How do I respond and live in light of who was elected, whether I voted for them or I didn't vote for them, right? Dilemmas in the last two or 3 years. How should I handle all of these situations? How do I live in light of changing life in sticky situations? And that's not to mention all the other dilemmas that we face relating to family and relationships. And some of you even had that. Do I go spend time with my family? It's Memorial Day. Or would we be better off if we all just kept our distance, right? For a number of different reasons, dilemmas and situations. Dilemmas about life decisions, about dilemmas with sin and struggles there, ethics and ethical choices. There's a lot of dilemmas, a lot of situations we face where we just feel like, I have to know what to do and I don't know what to do. I just feel like I'm guessing a little bit. I'm trying my best, and maybe we've each felt or feel like we're just kind of riding the waves and reacting to everything, just reacting in the moments. And if you're like me, most of the time when the dilemma is presented to me, my first reaction is to say, I don't know what to do. I have no idea, right? I have no idea what I'm doing. And what's tempting and even very easy to do is to just set aside a lot of those decisions and say, well, I'll just wait till the gas tank runs empty and then we'll see, right? Or I'll just not mention this in front of my family, or I'll just not see them, or we'll get to it when we get to it. We'll make that decision then. We set aside those decisions, we set aside those dilemmas, or we just kind of ignore them like they're not there and hope they go away, like in Jurassic Park. If we don't move, maybe it won't see us. And maybe it won't, you know, be consequential. But they do see us. They are dilemmas. They don't go away, right? And that doesn't work. It doesn't work to just kick the can down the road, because it sometimes just gets bigger and bigger, but it's always there. However, this is what the teacher is going to address this morning. And so we're going to begin with that in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verses 1 to 4. The teacher says this. He says, a good name is better than fine perfume, and the day of death better than the day of birth. It is better to go to a house of mourning than to go to a house of feasting, for death is the destiny of everyone. The living should take this to heart. Frustration is better than laughter, because a sad face is good for the heart. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of pleasure. I'll explain what he's doing here. It is clever in his day, because it really takes his readers, his original audience, off guard a little bit, because he starts with a very popular proverb. In verse 1, it's the first line there, where he says, a good name is better than fine perfume. This is a popular proverb, and I can imagine, men who didn't want their wives spending too much money probably, yelled this from the other room as they were getting ready for the morning. Hey, a good name is better than fine perfume. You don't need to go to the store and get more. You've got what you need. It's better to be a good woman than it is to just dress yourself up like that. I can imagine those conversations. In fact, Solomon included this proverb from verse 1 there, in his collection of Proverbs. One of them, and it's recorded, a version of it is recorded in Proverbs chapter 22, verse 1. You can kind of reference that if you want to. But this is a popular proverb, and its meaning is just as popular today for us. The character of a person is the most important thing. Right, that's what this means. A good name is better than fine perfume. The character of a person, what people think of you, what they know of you, is more important than what's external. It's the most important thing. You can dress up the outside, but it doesn't change the inside. You can spray perfume all over it, but it doesn't change, what's rotten inside. Being impressive in character is more important than impressively presenting yourself. Being impressive inside is more important than being impressive outside. And really, in Solomon's day and in the teacher's day, the rich could buy expensive, only the rich could buy expensive perfume, right? And so rather than working towards affording perfume to impress people, work on your character to impress them. Is really what that proverb is pointing out. Like, you're not going to be able to afford expensive perfume. You think you want money so you can do this. So rather than working towards that to impress people, just work on your character. Be better inside. Be a righteous person inside and impress people that way. And that is great, and that is timeless advice, right? That's good advice. You can walk out here today and remember that that what's inside is more important than how you present yourself. And so the teacher quotes this popular proverb, and then he twists it and he gives it this somber and sobering twist. A good name is better than fine perfume, and the day of death better than the day of birth. really took a twist there, really took a turn there. Like, I was tracking with you, and then you lost me on this whole funeral thing. Like, that was great, and now I didn't see it going this direction. It seems like this is a sudden jump to a completely different topic, but it isn't. He's taking their understanding and our agreement in general. We agree, right? What's inside is more consequential than what's outside. What's inside is more important than what's outside. We agree with that the character of a person is more important than their appearance. And he says, so in the same way that what's inside is more consequential than what's outside, death is more consequential than birth. Death carries with it more significance than birth. So what's he getting at? What's he trying to point out here? The truth is, and this is true of all of us, I assume, I mean, unless you're an unusual person, want to call you weird, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but everybody loves birthday parties. Maybe not yours, right? Maybe you don't love being reminded your birthday, but everybody loves birthday parties. You like going to a birthday party. There's cake, there's ice cream, some of us are balloons. Oh, they're gone. We got them down. There were some balloons stuck to the ceiling on Friday from not a birthday party, but from the graduation. But everybody loves a good birthday party. And we celebrate what he calls in our house of feasting, right? It's better to go to a house of mourning than to the house of feasting. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about the birthday party. He's talking about the celebration of birth, the house of feasting. And we celebrate multiple times in the house of feasting every year, right? We love birthday parties. Everyone loves a good birthday party. But when was the last time you appreciated a good funeral? We tend to look more, we put it on the calendar, obviously, because we know their birthdays are going to come and going to happen, but we look forward to that. But we would not be too eager to write down the funeral day and then look forward to that and know this is coming, this is coming, this is coming. We want to look forward to the birthday party. We don't look forward to a good or appreciate a good funeral. And I don't mean enjoy. I don't mean enjoy it. I mean appreciate and make the most of the funeral. Like we don't tend to do that. We don't look forward to funerals like we do birthday parties. But the teacher says in verse 2, he says, it is better to go to a house of mourning than to go to a house of feasting, for death is the destiny of everyone. The living should take this to heart. Funerals are more significant than birthdays. They're more consequential than birthdays. Funerals are more of a reality check. Funeral carries with it more consequence. You get dozens and dozens and dozens of birthdays. You go to bunches of birthday parties every year. And if you're like me and your sister has, you know, 7 kids, it's like there's a birthday party every month, basically, for your family and their family. They're everywhere. She's not here to laugh at that. But so you go to dozens of birthdays. You get dozens and dozens of birthdays yourself, but you only get one funeral. You only have one, I don't want to make this sound flippant, but you only have one death day. You get a lot of birthdays. And so the teacher says, place more consideration, place more significance, place more reflection, more consequence on the day of death than on the day of birth. We're so attached to celebrations of life, but the funeral gives us a sobering reality about it all. It's the day birthdays stop. So it's of more consequence, is his point. It's of more consequence. Just like your character is more consequential than what you present, considering that the day birthdays stop is more consequential than celebrating each birthday as it comes. A funeral makes us think about our own mortality, about our own funeral, and the teacher says the living should really take this to heart. Those who are alive really need to consider this, to let it marinate a little bit in your mind. Your coming day of death naturally carries with it more consequences than your next birthday does. This isn't the first time the teacher has done this to us. This might sound a little bit familiar for those of you that's been tracking through this series. He reminded us back in chapter 2 that we can't avoid, meaning we shouldn't avoid, we have to think about this. We can't avoid thinking about death, except that death is a reality because it gives us a better perspective on life. We appreciate it more. And that's what he's saying it here. And this may frustrate you, verse 3. Frustration, it may frustrate you to think about this truth, but frustration is better than laughter. Because a sad face is good for the heart. It may frustrate you thinking about that. It may cause you some apprehension thinking about this. It may cause you sorrow thinking about what the consequences of it are going to be. And you may enjoy the birthday celebration more. Obviously, we enjoy the birthday celebration more. It brings laughter. It brings enjoyment. He's not saying that's bad. He's saying one deserves a little more of your attention, right? And the New Living Translation, it says this so great in verse 3, because in the NIV it says that a sad face is good for the heart. But the New Living Translation says sadness has a refining influence on us. Letting it sober you a little bit refines you as you think about life in light of that coming day. A sad face is good for the heart. Thinking about the inevitability of death at some point may bring you sorrow, it may bring you sadness, but it's good for you in the long run. It brings you down to earth. In fact, he says, it's wise to take note of the funerals. Fools only notice the birthday parties, only think about those. And there the teacher introduces his main idea with this proverb in verse 4 when he says, the heart of the wise is in the house of mourning. It's the heart of a fool that is in the house of pleasure that only thinks about the birthdays. So this is his main idea with these proverbs. No matter how much we want to ignore it, life is short. Life is short and death is inevitable. And so we need to live with wisdom. Life is short. Now, when I say short, I mean 60, 70, 80 years for 90 years for the majority, right? In the scope of eternity, if I was to put a rope here, start over that wall, and that rope is the length of eternity, right? And it just keeps going and going and going, you'd be just a little tiny thing over here on this end. So it's short. I mean, it feels long, right? Because 70, 80, 90 years it is long. But in reality, it's short. And so we need to live with wisdom. We have within us a tendency to ignore or avoid the consequential. It's easier to put on perfume than it is to work on who you are inside. It's easier to think about birthdays than it is about a funeral. And we have a tendency to ignore that. But ultimately, this causes us to not want to think about that day and only think about the happy things in life. And that's natural. It's natural for us to want to do that. But the tendency to ignore the consequential also causes us to not want to deal with life's dilemmas. It's the same motivation. Because I don't want to ignore consequence. I want to ignore what's consequential, what's significant, what makes me uncomfortable. Then we also ignore life's dilemmas. We also ignore life's difficulties. And if we can, we push them aside. We don't like to think about things that are consequential. The most consequential is death. I don't want to think about that. But other things that are consequential, like struggles with family, struggles with finance, how do I deal with this? We punt that down the road too because it's easier not to think about consequential things. We push them aside. We procrastinate on decisions. We agonize over obstacles. We drag our feet into confrontation. We pretend like everything is okay so we can avoid those things. But that's not wise. It's foolish. Fools act like everything is a party, everything's okay, the decisions can wait, let's just enjoy this now, and the ultimate expression of this foolishness is to completely ignore the fact that there is an end to life for everyone. And so the teacher's point is, because there is an expiration date on your life, accept it and let it affect how you live now. How you deal with all the dilemmas and all the issues of life. Don't accept, kick the can down the road, deal with them now and live wisely because there's an expiration date on this. This would be wise. And so his main point is, life is short. So it matters how you live. Live wisely. Life is short. And because life is short, it matters how you live. So live wisely. Paul, in the New Testament, he grabbed onto this truth and reiterated it with his Ephesian readers, the Ephesian believers that he was writing to. In Ephesians chapter 5, verses 15 to 17, Paul tells them, be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish. Instead, understand what the Lord's will is. You want to imagine that life is good and life is great, to just enjoy the ride, but it's not just great. The days are evil, Paul says. The days are evil. There are problems and there are difficulties, and there's not that many of the days. Right? They're against you. Right? They're opposed to you. They're just counting down. They're not counting up. They're not stalled. The days are evil with their dilemmas and their difficulties and the brevity of them. And we have no idea if it's 2 days or if it's 60 years or 70 years. And that's evil. We don't know. We don't have we have the birthday on the calendar. We don't have the other day on the calendar. And for that reason, because you're fully aware that death is inevitable, don't be foolish with your time. Make the most of every opportunity. Don't be foolish with your time. Live wisely, which Paul says means following God's will. Live wisely because the days are evil, because life is short. It matters how you live, so live wisely. Paul says, follow God's will. So what does that mean? How do we do that? The teacher is going to give us a couple examples. It's not an exhaustive list. There's a few examples for us. But before we get to his examples, let's talk a little bit about wisdom, because that's what he's focusing on wisdom. And so wisdom in the Bible has a very specific meaning, has a very specific understanding in Hebrew and in the Jewish world. Wisdom to the teacher, when he says that, isn't the same as intelligence. It's not just being smart. We tend to think of wisdom as intelligence or even experience. But people who are wise in the Old Testament, described as wise in the Old Testament, are those who are able to navigate life or an area of life practically, successfully, with skill, with results. So wisdom is the skill of successful living. Wisdom is the skill of doing well in situations, in diverse situations. And a very wise person does well, knows what to do, knows how to be successful in all sorts of situations. And Paul would add, when you get to the New Testament, Paul would add for the New Testament believer, and that would be us too, the skill of successful living in a godly way. Right? The skill of successful living with the will of God in mind, in a God-honoring way. In fact, the teacher places a high priority or high premium on wisdom, which he explains in verses 11 and 12. So I want you to jump down in chapter 7 to verses 11 and 12, the last two verses for this morning. The teacher says, wisdom, the skill of successful living, and in our world, godly living, wisdom, like an inheritance, is a good thing, and it benefits those who see the sun. Wisdom is a shelter, like you imagine money is a shelter, but the advantage of knowledge, which is a synonym for wisdom here, is this: wisdom preserves those who have it. The teacher here reveals that he places a high premium on wisdom. Wisdom is very, very valuable. And some versions make it sound like, when you read it, it says, sounds like if you can have wisdom and you can have money, then you're set. Right? When you read that, you might see, if you have wisdom and you have money, then you're set. But that's not consistent with the teacher's message so far. The better translation of verses 11 and 12 is that wisdom, like an inheritance, wisdom is like an inheritance, and it is good, and it has its benefits. But, he goes on to say, it's even better than that inheritance of money. It's like an inheritance because it's good, it's valuable, you should want it, but it's even better than that. It's even better than that money, better than that inheritance that you would get. You think money and wealth are good, wisdom is better, is what he's saying in verses 11 and 12. For those who are living, wisdom is invaluable. Knowing how to successfully live in situations in a godly way is significantly more valuable than money. Like you imagine, and we talked about this last week, you imagine money can shelter you. You imagine money can protect you. Your bank account can preserve you. Wisdom can do that and actually does shelter you. Right? You imagine that money is a shelter, but the advantage is wisdom actually preserves people who have it. The advantage that wisdom has over money is that it can actually preserve your life. helps you navigate successfully. And so what the teacher is revealing to us is that wisdom is far more valuable to us as we navigate all those dilemmas, all those struggles, all those situations in life. Wisdom is more valuable to us as we navigate those things. So pursue wisdom. Life is short. Spend your time pursuing wisdom. In fact, Solomon, again, when in his collection of Proverbs, calls wisdom a treasure worth hunting for. In Proverbs chapter 2, verses 2 to 5, he says, "Turn your ear to wisdom. Apply your heart to understanding. Indeed, if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as you would for a hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God." Wisdom is like a hidden treasure. It is worth hunting for, searching for. How can I successfully live in a godly way in this situation? Spend more time figuring that out than wondering, can my bank account recover this if I fail? And the reason wisdom is so valuable is because it comes from God. It is God's wisdom, right? It comes from the Lord. So when we partner with God to successfully navigate life, when we submit to His will in our situations, we have found something far more valuable and worth our limited time on this earth, worth more than wealth. So consider this from the teacher. One day, you are going to die. Your upcoming birthday will be nice, but have you thought about your funeral? One day you are going to die. So now that we've cleared the air about that, how are you going to live? Now that we've gotten that out of the way, I've admitted it for you. You've come to terms with it, I hope. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, there's a date. You don't know it. God knows it. There is a date, and that day is coming. So now that that's there, how are you going to live? How are we going to live? If you believe in God, choose wisdom. It's the only logical choice, the teacher says. Life is short, so it matters how you live. Live wisely. Pursue how God says to live in all those situations. So now he gives us examples, and we're going to work our way through these pretty quickly. So now he gives us examples, these practical applications that we can walk out of here this morning and use. The main idea is valuable, and hopefully that pierces us, right, sword through the spirit and the soul, and gives us something to walk away and say, man, I do need to think more about how am I living wisely, because life is short. I'm not going to get too many chances to try this again and again and to do-overs. But he's going to give us a couple of examples that we can walk out this morning with as well. And so these are, in a way, they're unrelated. It's his thoughts. He's just thinking through this. Okay, so how am I going to live? Here's some great ideas. The first one is this: hear and respond to correction. Since life is short and it matters how you live, then hear and respond to correction. This is a wise thing to do in the situations where you're corrected. Verse 5, it is better to heed the rebuke of a wise person than to listen to the song of fools. Like the crackling of thorns under the pot, so is the laughter of fools. This too is meaningless. Maybe you haven't. I've never burned thorns under a pot. So pine branches. If you ever put pine branches over a campfire and you've heard that popping, crackling, and burning quick, right? Imagine that instead. Imagine that, because that fits our context a little bit better. But since life is short, since death is an inevitable reality, it is wise then to hear and respond to wise biblical correction. And his example compares rebuke or correction with the song of fools. He says a very specific phrase here. It's better to listen to somebody who's wise rebuking you than it is to listen to the song of fools. So later he says it's the laughter of fools, right? That's the crackling thing in the fire. His description, that phrase is actually specific in his culture. He's specifically referring to the sound of partying inside a house. The song of fools, he's referring specifically to the sound of partying inside a house, maybe for a birthday, maybe for a wedding, could be for a number of reasons. It sounds fun when you're outside listening to that. It sounds fun. It sounds like a blast. So imagine yourself outside of a house. You can hear the music. right? Going through, people are laughing, you're peering through the window like a creepy person, and you see everybody having a lot of fun, right? And they're chatting, they're playing games, whatever it is, whatever looks fun to you, imagine that happening in the house, right? You're standing outside, and somebody that you respect and you know, walks up beside you and tells you, don't go to that party, because you're thinking about it. You're thinking about going inside. You got an invitation. You stand outside. It looks a lot of fun. And then somebody you respect, somebody wise, walks up beside you and says, listen, don't go into that party. Don't go there. Why would they tell you that? The party looks fun. And the reason is because they know, in the teacher's example, he knows the party, the fun, the laughter isn't going to last. Skip the party. Skip the party. Do something more significant because life is short. He's using this example. It's just supposed to be it's not a prescription to never go have fun. He's trying to get you to think about it's better to listen to the rebuke of a wise person. Skip the party. And he's saying to his audience, if you hear that correction, if a wise person warns you, don't waste your time celebrating, or don't do this, or turn away from this, you're messing up. If a wise person tells you something, or and wise meaning someone who knows how to successfully navigate life in a godly way. I'm not talking about a smart, intelligent person. I'm talking about a godly person. If a wise, godly person tells you, don't do this, listen to them. Don't go into that party. But the principle behind this goes even further. The fundamental truth is, it is wise to listen and respond to biblical correction. It's wise to listen, respond to biblical correction, whether it comes from a godly individual, but it can come from other places, specifically the one on your lap right now. Paul tells Timothy, that's what the Bible is useful for. The Bible is useful for reproof, for rebuke, for correction, for instruction. And so, and we said this a couple of weeks ago, when you open the Bible, life is short. So let it change you. Hear and respond to the correction. And if it tells you, don't go to that party, don't go. If it tells you, stop, stop. Because life is short. And we listen to the words of the wise, the godly individual, the godly book. If it tells you, go do this and do it well and do it right, then go do it. Go enjoy it. When you open the Bible, life is short, so let it change you. Let the biblical truth win. And so when it says don't, then don't. When you read it and its truth is clear, don't go and do the opposite. If it's clear what the truth is, don't ignore it. Don't kick it down the road and to a, I'll do it a later day. You don't know if there is a later day. If it's telling you to do it today because life is short, so live wisely. It's most valuable to you now. You don't know if it's going to be valuable to you in a week because you don't know if you'll have a week. It's valuable to you today. And what's important now with your time is to demonstrate trust in God by hearing and responding to his truth and his correction. And this correction might also come through a brother or a sister in Christ. They may express a biblical truth or a caution or a concern to you. Just because it hurts doesn't mean you should disregard it. It's not fun to think about your funeral. It's not fun to hear the truth from God's word, especially if it hurts. Listen to it. Consider it and let it change you. Better the wounds of a friend than the kisses of an enemy. Those wounds are better. That's another one of Solomon's Proverbs. That's not me. I'm not that smart. That's from Solomon in the Proverbs. It is wise. It is invaluable for you to hear and respond to biblical correction now when it's given. That's his first example. Since life is short, live wisely. Listen and respond, hear and respond to correction. The second example he gives us is going to be in verse 7, and that is to pursue humility and integrity. Since life is short and it matters how you live, then pursue humility and integrity. And we could go back to his very first proverb that he started with, right? A good name is better than fine perfume. Pursue humility and integrity. This is verse 7. He says, extortion turns a wise person into a fool, and a bribe corrupts the heart. Explain to you what he's saying there, because this verse could be a little bit confusing. But since life is short, since death only comes once, place a priority on humility in your life and on integrity in your life. Now, the teacher's example references someone who oppresses, someone who's doing the extortion, who's who's abusing other people, who takes advantage of other people, and there's pride there. There's pride in that person, and that pride reveals a lack of wisdom. Right? Extortion reveals that a person who appears wise, they seem to be doing really, really well with life. People really respond to them. Well, then you find out, no, they're just extorting, they're abusing, they're asserting themselves over other people in an unfair, unkind, ungodly way. Turns out they're not wise because they're not humble. They're proud. It just looked like they were. The pride reveals a lack of wisdom, and the teacher says, don't be that person with your limited time. Don't be a proud person with your limited time. Be humble instead. Don't flex over people. Serve them. Spend your time living in humility. And we've talked about this too. We have a tendency to try to put other people in the rearview mirror, right? We like to be first. We like to be in front. We like to be the one in the driver's seat. We like to have them underfoot. Don't. Time is short. Life is short. Don't be that person. Jesus himself told us we're supposed to love other people, meaning sacrifice for other people, be humble in the presence of other people. And Paul tells us to have Jesus' attitude in us regarding other people. You're likely familiar with this verse, Philippians chapter 2, verse 3. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Don't be proud in life with other people. Rather, in humility, value others above yourself. You can have the front seat. I'll take the back seat. Why? Because the Bible told me to, and I want to hear and respond to correction, and life is short. And so I need to be humble, not proud, and put myself over other people. And the teacher also connects humility in his mind. It's kind of the same coin here. He connects humility with integrity in the second half of verse 7. Because a bribe corrupts the heart. Don't be able to be bribed. Don't let yourself compromise. Don't be willing to compromise. Don't be enticed to give in to what you know is wrong. Integrity matters and life is short. So be humble and have integrity. Doing the right thing, even if it hurts, matters because life is short. And if we want to successfully navigate this life in a wise way, be humble and have integrity. Put others first and do the right thing even when it hurts. There's limited time, and so it's invaluable for you to pursue humility and integrity with however much time you have. That's his second example. Life is short, so it matters how you live. So hear and respond to correction, pursue humility and integrity. And the third example, he's going to give us two more. The third example is live patiently. Because life is short, and it matters how you live, then live patiently. This is in verse 8 and 9. The end of a matter is better than its beginning, and patience is better than pride. Do not be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the lap of fools. So this one seems a little bit contradictory, right? Because maybe you're feeling this way too. I've instilled in you now that we've been reading this for the teacher, there's a sense of urgency, right? Almost a sense of like, oh man, I got to do this. I got to do this because life is short. Life is short. Life is short. And then he says, hold on a second. Slow down. But it doesn't also mean that we need to act rashly, that we need to act quickly. The teacher suggests instead that we live patiently because life is short. Because there's a limited amount of days, live patiently. Sometimes in the moment, we're tested and we're tempted to react. And in his example, it's an anger. He gives an example of anger because that's when we can all relate to. We can all easily see, oh yeah, the flash in the pan, the temper goes, and suddenly I'm reacting in anger. And he says, that's not wise. It's not a wise use of your time. I don't know anybody that would argue it is a wise use of your time to be like, oh no, it was pretty valuable that I lost my temper and wasted that day on how angry I got. Hurt a lot of people, you know, damaged a few relationships. But the teacher says, clearly, that's not wise, that's foolish. And I think he wants us to all agree, we would all say, yeah, that's foolish. And is not respecting that life is short. And in this ironic twist, the teacher says that respecting the brevity of life, biblically, means let things play out for a minute. Let things play out for a minute. Give things time before you act. Don't react, act on purpose. And that takes letting this move past the fresh beginnings of a situation. Because the truth is, the end of the matter is usually better than the beginning. So give it time. Bob Miller, one of our friends that has moved down to Florida, but he told me one time when we were doing a work day or whatever, he told me, he's like, just water it and let it grow. Water it and let it grow. Give it time. Give it what it needs. Let it grow, and then you'll know better how to act. And I love that. I love that. The teacher says, often the end is better than the beginning, so be patient and let some time pass before you make a judgment, before you give a reaction or a quick take. James, the half-brother of Jesus, tells us this in his book in James chapter 1, verses 19 to 20. My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. And we could add, so because time is short, because life is short, it matters how you live, so put on the brakes on your reactions, on your hot takes, on your quick judgments. Being slow to react, being patient, produces Christ-likeness, and that's wise. That is wise. Time gives clarity, and yes, life is short, but because it's short, don't react instantly and make things worse and waste that time. Give each situation time for the flash of emotion to pass. This is very hard. You can't do this on your own. You have to have God's help to cool the emotions of the moment and pray before the situation comes. God, I know I'm a volatile person, or God, I know I'm quick to judge. God, I know I'm very critical. I know I react poorly in unexpected situations. Whatever it is, in the morning before those situations ever happen, God, life is short. I don't want to ruin the time with my impatience, my quick reactions. Give me patience. So play the long game, because the end of the matter is better than its beginning, and patience is better than pride. And trust God. Trust God that if I give this time to marinate and for deep breaths, the result will likely be much more godly and wiser and better with my limited time. This is an invaluable and a wise way to make the most of your limited days. Life is short. It matters how you live. So hear and respond to correction. Pursue humility and integrity. And the fourth thing and the final example, live in the present. Live in the present. And this may be one of the hardest things for some of us, but live in the present. This is verse 10. Do not say, why were the old days better than these? For it is not wise to ask such a question. Live in the present. Since you aren't going to live forever on this earth, and death is an inevitable reality, live in the present. This is specifically in regard to the past. It's very easy and it's very tempting to live in the past and dwell on the past. And the teacher expresses this wistfulness. You see it there. He expresses a wistfulness that we all kind of have. We all tend to have this fondness and this rose-colored lens of the past in many ways for what once was. And the teacher quickly says, that's not wise. Like we can do that. Like we could say, man, the old days, why are the old days better than these? They were so good. And he says, but that's not, it's not wise to ask those questions. Some of us live in the past and wish for how things used to be. And that might be in our family. You wish that, man, I wish our family could be the way it used to be. Or relationships. I wish I hadn't lost this or said this or done this. And it was just better back then. It might, you know, this wishing for once was might be in our church. I wish things used to be this way. It might be in regards to our health. Man, remember when I used to be able to do that? Remember I used to be able to just take this or eat this or whatever it might be? It's the good old days, and it's okay to reminisce. It's not bad to reminisce, but it's important to understand that for every moment you spend wishing for the past, you're not successfully living in the present. You're not living wisely in the present for as long as you're giving the past your attention. And God has you somewhere else now. You're in a different place now. And God is asking you to be wise and be faithful in this new present. And yeah, the situation's different. The family's different. The location might be different. The emotions and the feelings of it might be different. But God isn't asking you to live wisely and godly 2 years ago. He's asking you to live faithfully and wisely now, in this present. And so live in the present, don't live in the past. It's great memories, but you're losing daylight if you're letting what happened or what was in the past affect everything in the present. Now, to that point, some of you are hearing this and you're thinking, you are wrong. I don't wish for the past. I can't get over the past. I'm having a hard time dealing with the past. Sometimes the past wasn't better, it was worse, and we live in the past because of guilt or because of past failures and decisions, and that's also not wise. It's also not wise. If you've dealt with that with God, if you live with that guilt or that past failures or those past decisions, if you've dealt with that with God, Jesus has forgiven you. It's done. It was nailed to the cross. It's over. Love takes no account of wrong suffered, and God is love. You have his forgiveness, so live in the present. You are losing daylight over something that God no longer holds against you if you have his salvation and forgiveness. Don't be flippant about it. Learn from it, but live in the present faithfully, wisely, in a godly way. Paul, if anyone would understandably struggle with this, right? Paul, formerly Saul, murderer of Christians, like intentionally deceiving and leading Christians into traps so that he could have them arrested and then forced into the arena or into their deaths, murdered. You would think that if anybody struggles with their past, Paul would struggle significantly with that, having to face the families of people he sent to their death and trying to convince them that he's changed now. And this murderer of Christians turned prominent Christian leader said this in Philippians chapter 3. His words, one thing I do, forget what is behind and strain towards what is ahead. Press on towards the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus. My eternal life is there. And I'm going to live in the present and press forward today because my eternal life is there. Now this is something that God gives us the ability to do. You can't will this. You can't will that away. This is something God gives us the ability to do. That's what, go back and read chapter 6. That satisfaction, that contentment with where we are now, that dealing with the past, or even that's something that God gives us the ability to do, something that we work with him on doing. But it is wise for you to do it. It is wise and it is invaluable for you to live in the present. So deal with it with God and do what you have to do spiritually through prayer, through the Bible, to live in the present. So these are just four examples from the teacher of how to live wisely because life is short. Think of your life. Think of your current situations. Look at those 4 points. Won't these help you navigate your days better? If you do these things, if you do these 4 things, if you hear and respond to correction, if you pursue humility and integrity, if you live patiently, and you live in the present, will these not, if you do it in a godly way, will these not help you navigate life better today? And what's more is you will discover more ways to live in successful godly ways as you study God's word on your own, and you can add to that list and apply those too because they'll help you navigate better and better all those dilemmas that you face in life and make the most of your limited time that you have. And so this morning, we are being asked to recognize and acknowledge life is short. It matters how you live. Please live wisely. Let's pray.